Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And tonight I'm going to be talking to a man who goes by the name Dark Waters. It's also the name of his YouTube channel, and he collects odd and creepy stories from people. And he vets them out and puts them on his YouTube channel. So we're going to talk a little bit about his own experiences, how he got into doing this, and then he's going to tell us some tales that he has collected over the last about year and a half, I think it is. And if you're a patron, he's going to throw one episode, actually, of Dark Waters for patrons that is not up yet. So you'll be able to check that out as well. If you want to become a patron, it's only $3 a month. Go to wheredidtheroadgo.com. And there's also going to be a patron-only Ask Us Anything show posted next week based around one of the questions patrons had for us. And what else is going on? We got some finalized t-shirt designs. So within the next few weeks, you're going to be able to order a Where Did the Road Go t-shirt, hat, mug, all kinds of stuff. I just got to figure out which service we're using, and then that will all be up. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter. There's a Facebook group as well. And of course, you can find links to everything at wheredidtheroadgo.com. And I guess that's it. So this is my interview with Dark Waters. All right. And my guest tonight goes by the name Dark Waters. And this is the name of your podcast as well, correct?
Absolutely. Actually, it's a YouTube channel where I tell true scary stories that are related to me from regular everyday people who have these encounters.
And how do you judge whether or not they're telling you the truth?
It's a process. It's a very long and lengthy process that requires multiple conversations. So typically a person will call me. Typically I'll take calls for a week. And I'll spend that first week screening people for their first phone call. And I'll listen to their story. I'll have them tell it to me two or three times. And then I'll stop talking to them for a week or so. Then I'll take calls again for another week. And then that second week, which is 3 weeks out, I'll start trying to talk to them and their family members, any witnesses that they've had that were there. I would try and get those connections tied in. And by the third time or the third conversation or the third week of conversation, because sometimes with some people it's 10, 12 conversations over the course of 3 weeks, you pretty much are able to vet out whether that person is telling the truth or not. Because one thing as human beings we have a trouble doing is just keeping the consistency of a story that's not true. Yeah. And then there's these other telltale signs like with husband and wives, right? The people who haven't been telling the truth and they haven't had the encounter, when you talk to their wife, she doesn't want anything to do with it. She wants to stay away from the conversation because she doesn't want to kind of be caught in the middle. The ones who've actually had the encounters, well, their wives are in the background kind of vouching for what happened. Either that or their wives are telling you about the effects of what happened to them.
Hmm. Okay. And the YouTube channel, how can people find the YouTube channel easily?
Oh, it's very easy. Just go to YouTube and type in Dark Waters and it'll pop up. It just dominates YouTube when it comes to horror narration and horror stories.
Okay. And so everything you have up there, as far as you know, is a true story.
Absolutely. I'll say 98% true. And that 2-3%, 97%, that 2-3% is stuff that I actually omit from the stories that I don't feel comfortable with people having that information. One of the things that I've discovered is that when I first started this, I didn't think people are crazy enough to actually go to a spot where, you know, someone had a demon encounter or they had a dog man encounter or a Bigfoot encounter. What I learned over time is that people will actually go to these locations. So I started whitewashing a lot of the locations because it gets dangerous.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And I totally believe people would go there. I'd probably go to some of these locations trying to see if I could have, you know, pick up anything in that place. Now, you've had some experiences of your own.
Absolutely. I had my earliest paranormal experience when I was 12, going on 13 years old. And it was with a shadow creature that came towards me or was coming for me when I was a 12-year-old boy going on 13. in Mississippi on my family's land. And from there, I've had multiple paranormal experiences throughout my whole life, from seeing doppelgangers while I was babysitting to recently seeing a little girl in my house. Woke up in the middle of the night and there was this little girl standing next to my bed. I always have crazy stuff that happens, you know, keys being moved, shoes being moved. I had a Nike shoe that went missing for 2 weeks, and then I found it behind the washing machine, which there was no way that that shoe could have gotten it. So I always have little freaky and creepy paranormal things that happen to me. At times, it gets a lot, I guess you could say at times it elevates, the activity elevates depending on who I'm talking to. And that's the one thing about doing this. Anybody who knows anything about horror narration on YouTube, most of the stuff that people narrate and tell, the stories that they tell, are what's called creepypasta, which are made up stories.
Right.
What I do is, because I speak to regular people, you know, Mary around the corner, Joe up the street, if these people have certain entities that are attached to them or bothering them, sometimes when I open myself up to them over that 3-4 week process of listening to those stories, then every now and then I'll get hit by one of those entities or visited by one of those entities. So it can get to be a little nerve wracking at times. Sometimes my sons tell me stuff like, hey, you know, they'll come over for a week and say, hey, you know, your house is not like it was the last time we was here. You need to do some praying because something's here. You know, they can feel it, like something's different in the house. So it's one of those things I really enjoy doing this. I love doing it. But over time, I've learned to be very, very careful about what I do, who I speak to. And trying to, if it's something demonic or especially demonic stuff, I try and back away from it real quickly.
Now, you said that your grandmother, is it, was into hoodoo and voodoo?
Well, my grandmother and my mother's side of the family, my grandmother is a hoodoo priestess. We discovered that, and that's a long, drawn-out story, but I'd be happy to go into it.
Sure.
When I was 12 years old, I'm leaving my grandmother's house. Well, we actually have two houses on a piece of property, right? They're side by side, about 45 yards apart. And I'm leaving the girl's house, which is the house where all the females stayed. And then we had a boy's house where all the men stayed. That's what we called the girls and boys' house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big family. I'm talking about I have 4 aunties and 7 uncles. So we have a huge family. When you add, you know, cousins and all these other people, I mean, it's just a huge family. So I'm leaving that house, headed to the boy's house, and it's about 9-10 o'clock at night. And, you know, it's not a lot of light because it's really in the country. And as I'm walking from one house to the other, I see this thing out towards the back of the property. In fact, we have a basketball goal there, and it was to the right of the basketball goal. There's a light to the left of the basketball goal in the corner. And this shadow is there with these red eyes. And as a 12-year-old boy, I kind of freeze and I'm frightened. And this thing starts moving towards me. And luckily, my older cousin comes running out of the house, grabs me, pulls me into the boy's house and takes me in the bedroom. And he spends the rest of the night with me. Well, when I got older, I discovered that my grandmother was in the hoodoo. And that not only was my grandmother in the hoodoo, that they had used hoodoo on a lot of people throughout the years. And that there was supposed to be, and I really believe this is true because I had a cousin who died at 12 years old. That she did a deal with one of the hoodoo demons that in order for her to live longer, that they would take the soul of a 12-year-old boy in our family. That grandmother of mine is still alive today. She was supposed to die this week. Literally, my sister went to go visit last weekend because she was in the hospital to say she was going to die. And she came out of the hospital and went back home and she's alive again. So, it's crazy. Like, I'm talking about in the hospital, they're giving her morphine for pain. And this is the craziest thing. So, you know, she's 98 years old, going on 99 years old.
Wow.
You know, at that age, most people who are elderly and they're up in age and they're at a point to where they know they're going to pass away, they absolutely want to make sure that they get their last rites. They want to have someone pray over them, you know, trying to make sure that their soul passes on. Well, my sister's there in the hospital with my grandmother, and the preacher comes in, which is the preacher that's been preaching to the family for years. And he says, hey, I came over here to pray, over you. And she starts to curse and swear at him, which language I won't use, and says, look, leave, get away from me. And my sister's telling me the story because my sister's there. I don't even associate with this side of the family anymore. I told her to stop, but she still does it. So She's like, I can't believe that she did that. And I'm like, well, you know, your grandmother's evil. She's like, well, my sister's a great person and she doesn't want to believe it. But that preacher ends up leaving. He stands at the doorway, does a prayer and leaves. When he's leaving, he tells one of my uncles something's not right with her. Right. Which I've known that my whole life. So the hoodoo in my family background and some of the things that they've done is just it's completely and totally ridiculous. Another thing, I have my mother died of breast cancer. All of my aunties have had breast cancer. My father went to go visit my grandmother. Right now, my mother died years ago. I don't want to give those that particular date out because I might give too much information. But
sure.
My mother died years ago, so my father's a widower. He goes to visit my grandmother, just being nice, right? And said he walks in the room and she says, "Well, I hear you have a woman down there in New Orleans. Where you at? You better not bring her up here because I don't want to see her. And if she come here, I have something for her," right? So they kind of go back and forth, have this argument. He leaves. A week later, he gets diagnosed with prostate cancer. So we spent a year fighting this prostate cancer that he had. One of my uncles, he just recently died of cancer. My favorite uncle, he died when I was 17 of lung cancer. So there's something, there's something amiss with that side of the family. I believe it's her hoodoo practices. And I believe that, you know, when you do those things that and you put out those hexes and those curses, that there's always a consequence for that. And it comes back. And I just don't feel like she's the person that's paying the consequence. I think we all are paying the consequences for our action, and she's not.
Well, it seems like there are plenty of non-evil hoodoo and voodoo practitioners out there.
Absolutely. That's not the case with her, though.
Apparently. Now, do you think there's a big difference between hoodoo and voodoo?
Well, yeah, there's definitely a difference between hoodoo and voodoo. And the difference, in my opinion, is that when you start talking about voodoo, the true form of voodoo, voodoo is a spiritual practice, a spiritual form of worship. And that's what it is. When you start talking about hoodoo, you talk about root working and working with earth elements and working with herbs and bones and different things to actually practice the darker sides of voodoo. Mm-hmm. And those are putting hexes and curses on people. So there's definitely a difference. And my family definitely knows the difference. Give you another story from my family, which I think people find interesting. This happened a month ago. One of my uncles comes in town. And when everybody, you know, because they have to go to Mississippi, New Orleans has the closest international airport. My family's kind of, you know, I got uncles spread out all over the place, right? So they all come through my father's house, and then they drive up to where they're going in Mississippi. Well, him and his wife come in, and they go to my grandmother's house, and they're going to actually help her clean up around the house because she's sick. They start moving around in the stuff in his bedroom that one of my aunties is in. Move a bed. They see this hole in the wall. Well, in those houses, there's the wood paneling on the walls. And they see a hole in the paneling, which is behind the bed. So essentially, if you lay in the bed next to the wall and you reach over towards the wall, there's a hole in the wall. And they reach in there for whatever strange reason, pull out this poppet, which is just a poppet is a effigy that's made of someone or multiple people. But it's, in this case, it's a teddy bear. And this teddy bear has pins in his throat, pins in his stomach, pins in his private part, and pins in the head. So my auntie, who's married into the family, she knows about all the stuff that's going on. And she's like, whoa, I'm leaving. I want to go now. So they literally were there for 3 hours and they turn around and come back down to New Orleans. And she ends up telling me the story of what she found and how freaked out she was about it. So we definitely have my family definitely has a lot going on. I believe that that is why I've been led to kind of do what I do, because I really always are having some type of paranormal thing happening to me, whether it's deja vu, whether it's meeting a person and instantly knowing that the person is just a bad guy or a good guy. It's something always going on. I think that's just something that runs in our bloodline.
Tell me about the doppelganger experience.
Yeah, I'm maybe a junior or senior in high school. And my mother at this point in time had this very close friend of hers, and they had these two sons. And so the youngest son loved me to death, called me Superman, and him and I would always play around. And so naturally, when they all wanted to go out and they needed a babysitter, they're like, look, we'll give you $100 to watch the kids, which to me is an easy $100.
Right.
I can take a girl on a date, you know? So I go to their house, and these boys are pretty good kids. You know, it's not like they're not wild children, but it gets late at night, and I'm like, hey, it's time for y'all to go to bed. The oldest one goes up, gets in the bed, no problem. The younger one is still running around being a hard-headed little kid, just being a kid, doing what kids do.
Right.
So finally, I get aggravated, and I chase his little behind up the steps and put him in bed. I put him in his bed. I put his brother in the brother's bed. They're both in the same room. Come back downstairs, give me a glass of water. I sit down and start watching The Golden Girls. I'm sitting there watching The Golden Girls on TV, and I see the same little boy that I put in the bed run around the steps and run into the kitchen. And I get up and I'm like, boy, didn't I tell you? I'm cursing. Didn't I tell you to get in the bed? What are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. I go into the kitchen. He's not there. So I'm thinking to myself, I know I'm not tripping. I know for a fact what I saw. So I hustle up the steps and go into the bedroom. When I get to the bedroom, the little brother's gotten out of his bed and he's in the bed with his brother. His brother's arm and leg is on top of him. So there's no way on earth that this kid could have been downstairs, because I would have had to see him go back up the stairs.
Right.
And on top of that, he's got his brother all on top of him. So I go back downstairs, sit down and watch TV and wait until the parents get there. But I know what I saw and I know what I experienced, and it freaked me out. But it was one of those things to where I know I saw something weird and strange, and I just let it go.
Well, maybe he was astral traveling.
I mean, he could have been. If he was, then he a bad little kid, because he showed enough. Someone showed enough ran into that kitchen.
And you said you also had shadow people encounters.
Well, I've had that shadow person encounter when I was 12, going on 13 years old. Now I did have a very, very weird one. There's this gentleman that I was talking to, and this is the crazy thing about talking to. I don't know if you just talk to like random people ever about the paranormal.
Sure.
And most of the times we kind of talk to, I mean, not in a radio format, like they call in, but I mean, just like let them call you anytime. Right. So this gentleman calls me and he starts, this is way before I figured out not to deal with the demonic stuff. This is before I figured it out. I figured it out right after this. He calls me. I'm sitting right here on this porch where I'm talking to you right now. It's about 11:30, 12 o'clock. And it's warm outside. I'm smoking a cigar. We're talking. And he starts going into these demonic encounters that he had. And he started off playing with a Ouija board. And he went on to try and do some magic spells. So he was a dabbler in a dabbler in magic and a dabbler in different in Wiccan, right? So he's dabbling, which those who dabble are the ones who get hurt. Those who study are the ones who tend to find a mentor and learn. So he's a dabbler. And he starts telling me about this shadow figure that he would see and how it would hover over his bed at night and all the rest of the stuff. So I'm sitting on the porch, and when I look out from where I am, there are these power lines that run right in front of my porch, right? So the first weird thing happens is these two black crows in the middle of the night land on the power line. And then I start getting this kind of weird feeling. Now, blackbirds don't fly at night. Anybody who knows anything about blackbirds, they don't fly at night. Most birds don't fly at night. Land on the power line. And they're like literally right in front of me, and they're just looking at me. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. And I noted. Then I start getting this freaky, weird feeling. I'm like, okay, I probably need to get on the phone with this dude because something's not right. We continue to talk for about 5 more minutes, and I start seeing something moving out of the corner of my eye. Now, my porch is elevated, I would say, and you got to remember this is New Orleans. We flood a lot. I would say about 12 feet up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting down, and so I see this thing moving out of the corner of my eye, and I have these little kind of palm trees on the porch, but behind these trees, I see something moving. So I get up, and I start moving around. I look around the trees, and there's this huge shadow crossing the street, and I'm like, whoa. I say, hey, man, I have to call you back. I got to go. Hang up the phone, come inside, close the door, and I light my prayer candles. After that, for about a week, I wasn't comfortable sitting outside at night. And so that's when I discovered that I really, really need to be conscious of who I talk to, you know, and because I'm opening myself up to that individual as I speak to them about their encounter. And the way I do things is very, very personal. So it's not like I'm just like, oh, tell me your story. Click. Bye bye.
Right.
It's like, how did it make you feel? You know, What happened? Describe it. What were you doing? In order to actually capture the essence of the story, you have to capture the essence of that person's emotions during that encounter. So I really open myself up to them and they open themselves up to me. Turns out that that kind of stuff can get things to attach themselves to you. Or some entities get rather angry because you're interfering in their business. So I've had that. I'll tell you another real crazy one. A lady calls me. I was in Dallas at this point in time. Lady calls me and I'm at a cigar shop smoking and we talking and she's telling me about this quote unquote curse that her family has. And the interesting thing about talking to people is that no one just comes out and says, hey, you know, I'm haunted by a demon. They never say that. They kind of ease you into it because they're talking, especially when they're telling the truth. They're so traumatized behind it that it all comes out in conversation. So I'm talking to this lady. She talks about how her family's cursed, how when she was a teenager, her mom was driving by this particular house and they saw the house and her mom fell in love with the house and they went through all this trouble to buy it. And the minute they moved in, her mother and her father started having problems. They had a divorce. Things start going weird and freaky in the house and stuff starts happening crazy. Then things start happening to their family. You know, every time they get a new car, they have an accident. They buy a new microwave, it breaks. They get a new dishwasher, it breaks. You know, just stuff that you know is just some entity constantly messing with them. So she goes on to tell me a story about before her father moved out, how she was coming out of the bathroom. Well, she was coming out of her bedroom and her father was in the living room in the hallway. If you're standing at the bedroom door of her house and looking down the hallway, you can see her father sitting on the sofa. She gets out of the bed to go use the bathroom. And as she's walking down the hallway, this dark, smoky figure appears in the hallway. Well, it doesn't appear. It kind of comes out of the floor and it's blocking the view of her father and all the light. So she starts freaking out and screaming and all this other stuff. Dad comes, runs through the thing, pulls her in the room and prays, and it goes away. The same lady goes on, and that was my first indication, but I didn't catch it because I'm thinking, oh, this is just a shadow figure, right? That's okay. Same lady goes on and starts talking about as she gets older, she starts to get harassed at night. Gets to the point where she finally says what she thinks it is, right? She says she's laying in the bed. She's about 16 years old. She's laying in the bed on her side, and as she's laying on her side, she gets this vision in her mind that there's something behind her or something coming to get her. And she starts to sense that something's laying in the bed behind her. And as she's laying there, she feels a finger. I'm not going to say where it touched her, but you can use your imagination. Penetrating a part of her body. And when she looks over her shoulder, it's this woman, like with a black veil on and this kind of reddish greenish eyes that's laying behind her. She jumps up out of the bed, screams and holler, goes to her parents. And she leaves and goes to stay with somebody else because she doesn't want to stay in that house. So I asked her, I said, well, what was this? She said, well, over time, we discovered that it's a demonic entity. As I'm holding that conversation with her, as I'm talking to her at the cigar shop, sitting at the table, there's a bathroom to my left. There are people sitting in front of me, like literally sitting in front of me watching TV. And something tells, and I'm eating these chicken fingers and french fries. I hadn't eaten anything all day. Something, my intuition, God, or whatever you want to call it, tells me, hey, stop eating right now and throw that food away and start drinking water, right? So I take my food, I throw it away, take a sip of water, take that sip of water. About 15 seconds left, I took that sip of water. I feel like my throat is closing up, like my throat is literally closing and I'm having a hard time starting to breathe and all this other stuff. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. I get up, go to the bathroom thinking, okay, well, maybe, you know, maybe I'm just freaking out. I don't know. I recover from that. Later that night, my girlfriend and I are laying in the bed. And she's laying with her back turned to me. I'm laying my back turned to her. And just as I'm falling asleep, I start to feel what feels like a finger going into my nose. And no, not my nose. It went to my nose second. It went into my mouth. And as I feel this finger penetrating my mouth, I bite down and I get this horrible taste in my mouth. And I wake up, I sit up, I'm like, oh my God, I just bit something. I'm thinking I bit her finger. I'm thinking she's messing with me while I'm sleeping. So I roll over, babe, are you okay? And she's like, why are you waking me up? Let me go to sleep. I'm like, okay, so that wasn't her. I'm like, okay, I know, I still have this taste in my mind. I know I tasted something. I start trying to go back to sleep again. Just as I'm falling asleep, and it happens I don't know what the state is called. I don't know if it's what state of sleep you would call it technically, but it's right when you're falling asleep, right before you hit that deep sleep, where if you were, if someone was talking, you could still hear them, but you were going to the other world or the other land of sleep.
Mm-hmm. That's sort of in between state, yeah.
In between state, I feel something going into my nose, a finger. I mean, it's sharp, going into my nose, and it goes into my nose, down through my throat, and it touches my esophagus. And this time, I jump up, and I know I felt it, right? I jump up, and I don't know what to do. Again, this is before I really understood how much of a spiritual warfare dealing with this was. So only thing I could do, my friend, is I get up and I go out to the porch because I don't want to freak her out. And I start listening to, I grab YouTube and I find the first preacher I could find. I just put in preaching and I start playing it sitting on the porch, smoking a cigar. I'm freaking out and I start praying. That had to be about 3:30 in the morning. I stayed on that balcony. This wasn't a porch. It was about, I stayed on that balcony from 3:30 to 6:30. The sun was coming up when I felt like I could go back to sleep safely. So the sun is coming up. I go lay back down, go to sleep. By the time I'm going to sleep, she's getting up. Finally, I get up about 10, 11 o'clock. I reach out to a demonologist who's a part of the Dark Waters family. I tell him what's going on. I tell him I need him to talk to this lady. That's when I start to really, really understand the dangers of what I was doing. And he broke it down to me. He said, hey, what you experienced was an entity who didn't appreciate you meddling in his business. Did you offer her any help? I said, yes. He said, how long after you offered her the help did you feel like you were in danger? I said, about 5 minutes. He said, yep, that's what you experienced. Come back home, my washing machine breaks. 2 days later, brand new tire burst. And so I'm talking to him. I'm like, dude, what is going on? He was like, you're getting hit. He was like, you need to do your prayers. You light a prayer candle. He said, you pray for about 3 days, it'll stop. He was like, but you have to realize this is spiritual warfare. And the more intimate and the more personal you get in these things, then the more you get hit. And he was like, you're getting hit just a little, so don't freak out. But the most major thing, that consequence of this, has been since that day, I've been fighting with acid reflux. And prior to that, I didn't have it. Never, ever had it. But I've been fighting. When I say fighting with it, I mean, like, I got to take medicine for it daily. If not, you know, my stomach is, I feel like my chest is burning up.
Oh, that sucks. What is... like, of all the stories you've... how many stories do you think you've collected by now? Do you have any idea?
I probably got 80 videos up. Let's say I average 3 videos. Maybe 270, 280.
Wow.
Stories. And now those are the ones that I've shared. When we talk about the ones that I don't share, because some people don't really want their stories told. The most interesting thing about this is some people just want an ear or someone to listen. And so there's probably another 100 stories that I keep locked in my brain because I don't write anything down whatsoever. I practice memorizing them that I just don't talk about. I really don't, because people say, hey, I want to tell you this, but, you know, don't share it with anybody. I just want to be able to tell you because I know you understand and right. Blah, 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 blah. So it's a number of stories that I have, a huge number of stories.
How long have you been collecting them?
I would say this. I started this channel in November 2015.
Wow.
And I got the first set of stories in November of 2015. The very first set of stories came from very close friends of mine here in New Orleans who supported me when I was in radio. And I just told them, hey, this is what I'm doing now. And send me some of your paranormal stories, anything freaky happened to you. And they shared those stories. Then it evolved to me taking stories from the public. So I would say, going on a little bit over a year now. What's that? Makes it about a year and a couple of months?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Year and when in 2015 did you start?
November.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah. About a year and five months, something like that.
Yeah, 5 months.
So that's a lot. If you had to pick one of the strangest stories that you believed was true, what would it be?
The strangest one, I would have to say, cause there's so many on that are just completely, totally weird. The strangest one and the most is the vomit creature out of State Line, Mississippi. Because I've never heard of the vomit, and I have never heard of anything like I've heard of Dogman, Bigfoot, you know, little people. But this vomit thing was the strangest story that had ever been shared with me. And this one was related to me from a gentleman whose family is very, very well connected in that area. And his father shared this story with him, that he was driving on this roadway. And there's these dark country roads, and he gets a flat tire. And she's like, okay, it's nothing to it. I'm going to change my tire. He gets out, realizes he doesn't have his, what are those things that you take the lug nuts off with? The lug wrench, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have his lug wrench. So he's got to walk the 2 miles in the town to, you know, get help and come back. Well, as his father's walking down the roadway, he starts to hear this noises in the bushes. And his father's a very spiritual man. He was a deacon in the church. And his father says that, told him that when he was walking, something told him to stop and don't move. And the father related to the son as, God told me to stop and don't move. Whatever I see, don't move an inch or I'll die. So the father stops and stands there. And he listens and he watches as this creature walks out of the wood line and starts walking across the roadway. And he said that it had he said it was about 7.5 feet tall, very, very muscular, with long arms, regular, like, it wasn't like, you know, like people describe a dog man with hocks. It was like a regular person's kind of legs, but they were massive. I mean, extremely huge, but the feet were big. Like he said, the feet were spread out like you would imagine an alligator's feet being. Mm-hmm. He said it walked kind of lumbering. It walked like it was labored when it walked. It like stepped hard and it was struggling to walk. And this thing walked across the road right in front of him. And he said it took like 3 minutes for it to cross the road. So he stood there for 3 minutes. And it was the way that the angle that the creature took, it was angling away from him. So it was, he said that he felt like he was right outside of his peripheral vision the whole time. And this thing crosses the road and goes back into the woods. And once it crosses the road and goes into the woods, he runs as fast as he can and gets to the place, gets a tow truck, comes back, gets his truck. And that was it. But that's the strangest one that I've heard, because I never heard of a creature like that. And he described it. It said it looked like a walking alligator is what it looked like, except it had a shorter snout on it. And it still had teeth. And I was like, I've never heard anything like that. But there's stories out there from people with plenty of things that you'll never hear, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What are some of the dogman creature sightings you've encountered?
Oh, man, there's been so many dogman sightings. If we were to talk about the typical dogman sighting, the typical dogman sighting, and I classify them as typical and then extreme. Mm-hmm. Typical dogman sighting that I get from people is, hey, I was out in the woods hunting, and I was in my tree stand, and I saw a creature that looked like a dog, and I thought about shooting at it, but I didn't, right? When you get to the extreme encounters, I mean really, really, really extreme encounters, and this is one that I just talked to two brothers about this week. These two brothers are out in the woods hunting, and they shoot a deer. And when they kill deers, you know, they don't go run down and chase it, because the deer typically, when they shoot the deer, it typically runs off, and then it dies. So it's not like it dies on the spot. Sometimes they hit them, and the deer kind of stumbles off, and they have to track it after it's been shot. So in this case, they have to track this deer after it's been shot. So they wait about 30 minutes, go to start tracking the deer. They get to the spot where they know the deer died, because they see all the blood, but the carcass is not there. And so these two brothers split up. One goes right, one goes left, and they're looking for this deer carcass. The older brother is walking, and he's walking under some trees. And as he's standing there looking around, blood starts dripping on his shoulder. He's like, where's this blood come from? Looks up. The deer is in a tree wedged in between two branches, like something took it up there and wedged it in a tree. So he's like, whoa, you know, what can wedge a deer in a tree? So he's just standing there looking like, okay, this is crazy. The other brother comes over and he points it out to him. He's like, look, maybe we should go, because whatever did that, you know, we don't need to be around here.
Yeah.
The older brother's like, nah, that's my deer. Let's climb the tree and let's get the deer. So these clowns climb up the tree, leave their rifles on the ground, by the way, climb up the tree, and they're in the tree, and the older brother is there kicking the carcass, trying to kick it out of the tree because it's wedged in between these two limbs of the tree. So he's kicking it, kicking it, kicking it. And the other brother, whose name is Claude is in a tree with him, and he looks, the older brother looks at the younger brother, Claude, and he's just, his eyes are buck wide open. His face is flush red. He's sweating. He's like, man, what is wrong with you? And he's like, look over there in this other tree. So there's about another tree about 45 yards away. They both look in a tree. There's a dog man standing, not standing, but squatting on a limb of the tree. And the way he described it was squatting down, and it was holding the trunk of the tree in one hand. But it was 15 to 20 feet higher in the tree than they were. They were 20 feet in the tree. This thing was 15 to 20 feet higher. And so now they're both looking at this creature in a tree, and knowing that their rifles are on the ground, it jumps down and stands there. And I said, man, can you describe to me what this jumping down motion kind of looked like? And he said, oh, you don't believe me. I said, no, it's not that I don't believe you. I said, but I want to know the details of this because, you know, seeing something like that, you should be completely and totally traumatized. And at this point in time, he was way too calm telling me the story. So I'm thinking that he's lying.
Right.
So, because I'm like, you're too calm. If I'm in a tree away from my rifle and I see a creature, I'm going to freak out. So I want to pull more emotions out of him just to see what I can get. I said, describe the motion and describe how it made you feel. And he said, you know, I don't know how to describe the motion because I've never seen anything like that. He said, you've seen the Superman movies? And I was like, yeah. He said, you know how the Superman movie, Superman lands on the ground and it's like, bloom, and one hand hits the ground? He was like, that's what happened. It landed on the ground, one knee hit, one hand hit, and it stood straight up like it was nothing. And I said, well, what did it do? He said, it just looked at us. I was like, what do you mean it looked at you? He said, it looked at us, and then it looked at the deer. Then it looked at us, and then it looked at the deer. It looked at us and looked at the deer. He said, it was like it was telling us, that's my deer. He says, his brother Claude says out loud, look, you can have this deer, leaving out the curse words. You can have this and every other deer here. We're leaving. So the younger brother Claude climbs down out of the tree, and the older brother's like, yo, you know, where are you going? What is wrong with you? And then he realizes, oh, the rifle's on the ground. My brother's trying to get to the rifle. So they both come down out of the tree. Well, actually, before they come down out of the tree, the older brother kicks the deer carcass down. They both come down out of the tree. The thing is standing there just staring at him. And he says, not really being aggressive, but it's looking at them like you need to leave. So they pick up their rifles and they start backing away. The older brother says he wanted to point his rifle at the creature. But Claude, the younger one, says, no, leave that rifle down because this thing is going to kill us. So they back out of there, right? They don't have the nerve to go back in that area for another year and a half, 2 years. They go back to go hunting again after that. Shoot another deer. They go looking for the deer carcass, and they can't find it again. They say, okay, well, we already know what happened with that. Go back to their tree stands. They're like, okay, he has one. We're going to get our own deer. So they stay. They hang around. They're in their tree stands. They're waiting. Then they start hearing this growling. After that, they jump down out of tree stands, get in the cars, leave. They're gone. Talk their friends into coming back the next day because they had these very expensive tree stands that they wanted to get back. So they're telling their friends, listen, we need to go get our tree stands. And they tell them this bodacious lie about why they left them. They come back with three of their friends. So now it's five of them. Get out there. The deer stands are ripped out of the tree. The tree that the older brother was sitting in has this strong smell of urine around it, like the creature urinated around the tree. After that, they just haven't been back in that area again, and they say they won't ever go back in that area again.
I think that's reasonable.
So those are the more, I would say those are the more elaborate dogman encounters, and I don't mean elaborate like his embellished. I mean like those are more in-depth detail encounters with dogman. And the craziest thing is when you start getting to the in-depth detailed encounters, when people start describing the dogman, you know when a person's lying or not, because sometimes there's these details that are out there to the public, right? Like they have hands like raccoons, right? Or they have big shoulders and a small waist, and they have hocks. Those are things that are public knowledge that everybody who's ever listened to a dogman show hears about. But then there's these other things that are not really, really public knowledge that people don't really, really talk about. But if you've been dealing with it for a long time, the topic a long time, then you kind of know. The smells, the eyes, the actual eyebrows, the actual ridges on the nose, the size of the teeth, the size of the claws. When people start getting into details about, oh, it had about 6.5-inch, 7-inch sharp claws, when they start getting into how the people always talk about the hocks of dog man, right? And how it has kind of this reverse looking dog legs or whatever. But they never get into how the actual toes and how far spread apart the toes are. Those are things that I've talked to a number of people who had real verified encounters, and those are the consistent things that, you know, people, when they start describing them, they are able to describe. And these guys were describing all of that. And I was like, okay, you guys really saw it, and you're not playing with me. So Dogman is a very popular topic. I had my own Dogman encounter, being an idiot. And
well, tell us about that.
Yeah, that was very, very idiotic. It was just dumb. And to this day, I really feel bad about doing it. When I first started my channel, I got a couple of Dogman stories. One that I thought was very interesting because it was right on the outskirts of the city of New Orleans. And so I started searching for more of these encounters. And I started reaching out to friends and people who knew people. Got hooked up with this guy out of Oxford, Mississippi, who works for a power company where he repairs transmission lines, right? I mean, not transmission lines, distribution lines that run along roadways. He tells me about his Dogman encounter, invites me to come up to Oxford, Mississippi, and ride down through Taylor, Mississippi, in the area in which he had his encounter. So we go. I go like an idiot and not really believing in Dogman at this point in time. We're talking about a year ago, prior to me really having all these conversations with people and all the other weird stuff that's happened since I've learned about it. We're riding in his truck. We ride the area. And we end up where he had his encounter. So it's just before it starts to turn dark. And when I'm standing in the roadway, he's standing in the roadway. The truck is parked on the right-hand side of the road, still running. Driver's side door open, passenger side door open. He insisted that those doors be open. And we're standing there talking. And we start hearing this sound coming through the woods towards us. And he just says, hey, they're coming in on us. We need to go. But I'm thinking, you know, and I'm a city boy, so, you know, I don't know much about the woods, but I know what's coming through the woods sounds heavy. And I hear trees breaking and stuff falling over. So I'm like, you know, I'm not really concerned about this too much. I think it could be something, but he's walking to the car and I'm kind of lollygagging. I don't know. You know, I don't know if it was my ego or I don't know what it was. I just didn't take it serious, you know, and I should have. And so, and I guess it's because I didn't believe. And I guess when you don't believe in something, I'm witnessing this man freak out, and I'm more fascinated by the fact that he's freaking out than worried about my own safety. So he goes on over to the truck. It's like, you need to get in the truck. I circle around the other side of the truck, and my butt is against the driver's side door, but I'm not in the truck. And I'm talking, when I say it sounds like offensive lineman for the Pittsburgh Steelers running through the woods, that's what it sounds like. But I kind of want to see what it is. Well, I'm thinking that he's not, you know, I'm thinking he's going to stick around for a little while. He pulls off and leaves me. He just drives off. I mean, he drives off, and I'm in the doorway of the truck. The truck is on, you know, the door is on my butt, on my back. He pulls off. The truck door kind of bumps me and swings open. He's gone and leaves me right there on that side of the road. And completely freaks me out to this day, because I'm watching to the right of me. I'm watching the truck drive and turn around this bend. And it's this gradual turn. It's not like a sharp turn. It's like it just gradually turns out of sight. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm standing out here by myself. And so at this point in time, all the noises from the woods stop. But I'm standing there. And I know for a fact something is there. I grew up in New Orleans. I know what danger feels like. I mean, I'm not even going to get into my background, but I know what danger is. My body starts reacting to this. I start sweating. My heart starts racing. My pulse is like elevating. And my body's tensing up. And I can feel the presence of something there. Now, I can't see anything because at this point in time, the sun's gone down. And it's... you can't see anything, but I know something's there. And I'm standing there and I'm like, this dude left me. I'm about to die out here because I'm thinking this was all a game. I'm thinking this is a joke. I'm about to die. So the only thing I could think to do was I stepped my left foot forward, bent my knees slightly, and raised my fist like, okay, I'm going to fight whatever this is. And then it's the only thing I could think to do. It's the only reaction I had.
Right.
And just as I'm doing that, I hear the brakes on a truck go, like he's slamming on his brakes. Then I hear the engine rev up like, and now I know he's coming back. And as he's turning that bend, coming back around again, the lights start to shine up and light up the area across from me. And there's these trees, and there's this huge black shape. Now, and it moves from the tree directly in front of me to the tree about 7 to 8 feet to the right. It moves from one tree to the next. He pulls up in front of me, slams on the brakes. But this, in this case, the driver's side door is right in front of me. I'm not running around this truck to get in the passenger side. So I start to try and jump in the bed of the truck. I can't get my big behind in the truck. Finally, I step on a tire, hop in the bed of the truck. We pull off. As we get about a mile away, mile and a half away, he slows down, stops. I get in the front seat, and this argument ensues because I'm mad because I'm thinking this dude just left me. And, you know, he's – when I say he's freaked, like, it almost – I haven't seen the that look on a person's face since I was in my teenage years. When, you know, growing up in New Orleans, where you see people shooting at people and things going crazy like that, I hadn't seen that kind of look on a man's face in a very, very long time. He was completely out of his mind. I'm talking about, and he says, I did not leave you on purpose. I'm sorry. I thought you were in a truck. When I realized you weren't in a truck, I came back to get you. Why weren't you in a truck? So he starts cursing me out, saying you should have been in a truck. This is the argument that lasts for about 10 minutes. Finally, I said, I'm convinced that this dude didn't leave me on purpose. I'm like, okay, Skip, cool. You didn't leave me. Man, I need a drink. So we drive back. We go to this bar. We have a drink. And we sit down and we talk about it. He was like, dude, I don't understand why you didn't get in the truck. I said, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it at all. But what I heard running through those woods, it couldn't have been one thing. If it was one thing, it had to be the biggest thing in the world. And from that point on, I knew it was real. You know, I knew Dog Man was real because that area is exactly where he had his encounter. I mean, it was like he literally pulled his truck up where his work truck was the night that he had the encounter with the Dog Man. And since then, he's retired from that job and he doesn't even go out and do that kind of stuff anymore.
Wow. I think we have probably time for one more story. You said you had some encounters, or you had stories of encounters with little people.
Now, I've heard stories of encounters with little people, but The problem with the little people things is this. I don't repeat those, and you won't find those on my channel, because I don't really believe that these guys have seen these little... I'll tell you the story, but I can tell you right now, I don't endorse this story.
Okay, all right.
I don't endorse it at all. And if I could tell you a story, I would prefer to tell you this one, because I think this is definitely a true story.
Okay,
and
go ahead.
More modern. A neighbor of mine owns these properties down here, and he's been Airbnb in his properties, which is a real popular thing. Unfortunately, what people don't understand about my city of New Orleans, which I love, and I say in New Orleans, paranormal is the norm. What people don't understand is that these houses have been around since, you know, for hundreds of years. So he has this property in the Bywater, which is right across from the French Quarters, and he leases it out for Airbnb. This couple comes in town. And they come in a party. I mean, they come in and do the New Orleans thing, going to Bourbon Street, drinking, doing all this wild stuff that people do when they come to New Orleans. First night they leave out, come back. They know they turned off all the lights. There's a light on in the house. Husband is drunk. Wife is drunk. But he realizes that the light's on, but he doesn't worry about it. He goes to bed. Next day they get up. They go do brunch. He's like, I drunk too much. You can drink all you want. I'm not going to be doing this drinking. They go out again, see some jazz music, get some food, come back. His wife is stone cold drunk again. Gets her in the house, puts her in the bed. He goes to lay in the bed with her, and they start going to sleep. Halfway through the night, he starts hearing this scratching sound, right? And he's like, man, something's scratching in the room. And in these floors, in New Orleans, we used to have these vent fans in the floors of the house. These houses are so old that these go back before air conditioning. So it would suck air in through the bottom of the house. It's these huge fans. I mean, like maybe a 5x5 square on your floor. And those fans would suck air in and cool the whole house down from the bottom of the house. So he discovers that this scratching sound is actually coming from this old fan in the floor, this old vent in the floor. Goes over, gets up, goes over, clicks on a light. And when he clicks on the light, he looks back towards the bed, and there's this dark... this dark shadow, kind of shadowy figure that's in the shape of a hand that's reaching towards the bed where his wife is. he's like, man, this is, what the hell is this? This is crazy. It, the best way to describe it is, he said it was this smoky mist that, he said it swirled and twirled. He was like, imagine cigar smoke that's black, and you know how a person blows a circle with a cigar and how that smoke has kind of this life of its own? He said, imagine a big black mass like that, and that this hand is the shape, this mass takes the shape of a hand, but it's misty and it's moving. And so he's standing there watching this, gets up, runs, grabs his, I mean, he leaves from by the doorway where the light was, grabs his wife, pulls her out of the bed. She's fussing and screaming and fighting because she's like, why are you pulling me out of bed? I can't use the language she used. But gets out of bed. It's like, you got to get your stuff. We got to go. While he's arguing with her, he sees this mist go back into this vent fan or this vent in the floor in the house. Finally, they get all his stuff. They get out of there. They go to a hotel. The next day, him and his wife are having this conversation. And she's not believing too much of anything he said. And they start talking about that night. His wife was under the impression that she had intercourse with her husband that night, but they didn't. And so when he's telling me the story, he completely freaked out. He's like, man, because I think I had I think it's called incubus. He said, I know it was an incubus encounter because my wife will tell you that she had intercourse that night, but I didn't do it. He was like, I didn't do it. And she was drunk. And I was like, well, maybe she was drunk or she had a dream. He was like, no, she swears that she had intercourse that night. And I'm like, wow. That's one of the more scary ones. It's one of the newer ones. And I think it's a little bit more relevant to the city of New Orleans, because what people don't understand about this city is you come here, you come to party, you come to hang out, get drunk. But just beneath the surface of my city, which I love to death, there is a paranormal current that runs. We are the most haunted city in the world for a reason. And so it's a cautionary tale to people when you come down here, you know, don't lose your head when you're down here partying, you know, keep your wits about yourself, because not only are the streets here dangerous, but then just everything else is dangerous, you know?
Wow. All right. And again, your YouTube channel is Dark Waters.
Dark Waters channel. My Facebook is DarkH201. Twitter is DarkH201. And I would love for people to join the Dark Waters family. I put out stories pretty much every other day. New content comes out. And to tell you guys a little about the content, you won't find anything like this, because it's a dramatization of the story that I'm telling with music, with sound effects. And it immerses you in the story. The number one compliment I get from people who listen to the stories on the Dark Waters channel is, I feel like I was there when I heard this encounter. And that's what I go for. And the way I pull that off is by capturing every little emotion that the person feels and experiences.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of these stories with us. How can people contact you if they have a story they'd like to share?
If you head on over to that Facebook page, you will find that my phone number is out there and my email address is out there. It's posted. It's pinned. So anybody can call me at any point in time and share their story.
All right. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here with you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I thought it was definitely very interesting. Some really bizarre stories in there. All right. As I said, there's going to be an extra segment. Not really an extra segment. What Dark Waters has done is sent me a show that he has not aired yet. And the name of that is Dogman and My Demons. And Dark Waters says, this gentleman called me about 3 weeks ago and shared his story. He was here in New Orleans in 2009 and had this encounter. The story is an all-encompassing of his personal tragedy and the effects of his encounter with Dogman. So that's for patrons. If you want to become a patron, www.wheretotheroadgo.com. It's only $3 a month. And like I said at the beginning, there is a patrons-only show I'm going to be airing probably next week, where we deal with obscure conspiracy theories and paranormal stories that might actually be true. All right. And if you are a musician and would like your music featured at the end of Where Did the Road Go, drop us a line at contact@wheretotheroadgo.com and give us a link to download some of your stuff. And chances are I will use it at some point. It doesn't matter what style it is. We've done everything from metal to jazz. So just drop us a line. Don't think that it's not necessarily going to fit. We like to support independent artists. You just have to have the rights to it and give them to us to air on the show. And Yeah. So we're going to close with something from David Wirsig, and I've used a couple of his songs in the past. You can find him on Bandcamp. His last name is spelled W-I-R-S-I-G. And this is a song called Kaden, K-A-D-E-N. I do believe his stuff is all pay what you want on Bandcamp. So if you like it, shoot him a few bucks, or you can just download it for free. It's totally up to you. Some really cool stuff. So here you go. See you next week.
Soul is in bloom, is entirely consumed. stretch their arms.